So you want to talk a little more about that right now? About what it was about Caesar that made this connection with people?
Sure. Okay. It's a difficult question to answer why people followed Cesar Chavez. I was very young at the time when this was going on, and as a 13, 14-year-old, we interpret things differently from adults. Even looking back at what was going on, it's difficult for me to say exactly what it was about Cesar Chavez that people believed in him. Personally, I think it was that he was one of them. He dressed like a farm worker. He acted like a farm worker. But he touched their souls in a way that nobody else had ever touched them. He gave them inspiration. He gave them dreams that they had never dared to dream before. For example, we used to go, I was one of the ones that worked with a small hope that's been outlawed. But I got to do that kind of work. He would tell us, that's not right for a human being to be expected to go and do that kind of stoop labor, bending down all day long like that. That's not good for us, and we should protest. We should object to that. Certainly, he wasn't the first person to come up with the idea that we should object to those conditions. But he did more than just spout rhetoric. He did more than just complain. He would say things like, together, you know, the union is strength. It's the togetherness. If we work together, if all of us work hand in hand, we can make these things happen. Yes, you're going to suffer. It is going to be difficult. This is not something that's going to be easy for you. We're all going to have to work very hard, but the end will result in success. And are you willing to do that? And I think that the reason people said yes to him, the reason he had the following he did, is because each person felt important. When Cesar Chavez would meet them and talk to them, he would talk to them like a real person, not as a leader to a member. He would talk to them as individuals. And when he saw them again, he knew exactly who they were. He remembered their wife's name, the children's names, what school they were in. He showed so much humanity that there was always something that touched that person. I'll give you an example for me. I mean, I respected him, I admired him, but like I said, I was 13, 14 years old. But I'll tell you something he did that was so significant for me. When I was in high school, you get your class rings when you're the end of sophomore year. And my father was working for the union. And so what the union would do at that time is you submitted all your bills to the union would pay for them. But there were no extras. I mean, they would pay for food. They would pay for your rent. That was it. Certainly, class ring did not fall into necessity. A yearbook did not fall into necessities. Clothing was, we never bought clothes. It was just whatever clothes we had, because all that the union would pay for was for our rent, which was, I guess, $30 or something a month. But one thing that he did when he found out that I didn't have a class ring, because my father was working for the union and that was not one of the allowed items, he said, no, that's not right. You need to have a class ring. And he put in an order for my class ring, and I got my class ring. And I just thought, I was willing to accept not having a class ring because I felt this is for the union and I can't take money away from the union. And I was happy. I was not complaining. It was not something that I felt I had to have. But the fact that he looked at me and said, you're in high school, you're graduating, this is something that the union should not take away from you, that really touched my heart and my soul. And after that, I said, I'll do whatever I have to do to help Cesar Chavez and whatever I have to do to help the union. Before then, I think I was doing it more because my father told me to do it, not necessarily because I felt that I had a calling or a following or a dream. My father told me to do certain things and I did them. But after that, nobody could say anything bad about the union without hearing from me. And I was just totally devoted to the union.
That's a great story. Talk a little bit about that experience you have when you're going down to Delano with the money that you and your father have raised to the Friday night meeting at Filipino Hall.
My father was the union representative in Porterville, and part of his job was to have fundraisers and gather money for the strikers, because if we were bad off as farm workers, the strikers were even worse off. The strikers had left their jobs for the union because they were on strike, so they had no food, they had no clothes, they had nothing. They couldn't pay their rent. They needed money, and the only people helping them were other farm workers. There were no other means of support for them. It was the union dues, it was fundraisers. So the first time that we had a fundraiser in Porterville and we donated all of the work, and so every single penny that we got from the fundraiser, we took it to Delano, and we were at a union meeting at Filipino Hall. And so my father had already told Cesar that he had some money to donate. So they said, go on up. So he went up to the podium, and so he stood there. And my father is a very good-looking man, and he looks very impressive. And he stood there, and he started out very strongly, and he said, good evening to all. Mi nombre es Marín Barrera. Yo soy el representante de Porterville. And he stopped, and he didn't know what to say anymore, so he turned to me. I was in the audience, and he said, y aquí está mi secretaria. Aquí está mi secretaria para decirles para lo que vine. And so he called me up, and of course it became a local joke that he was saying, here's my secretary to tell you why I'm here, because here's his 14-year-old daughter who comes up, and I knew what he wanted to say. So I was able to speak and let them know that we had had the fundraiser and we had the money. And after that, oh, my dad just became well-known for that. So all of his friends in the field would say, hey, where's your secretary? is your secretary coming to help you pick oranges? But it was all very good-natured teasing. And then later on, of course, they started calling me the attorney because I would argue about everything. So then I went from the secretary to the attorney. So they would tease him about that as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the day-to-day things you can do to support the union when you're in Porterville. You're collecting dues and stuff like that, but you're picketing and you're representing the picketers when the police come. Talk about how that works.
Well, one of the things that we did was it shifted. At some point, the strategy shifted from just the strike to the boycott. And with the boycott, basically, we were picketing in front of the stores that carried the scab grapes. And in Porterville, what my father would do is all of the farm workers had to work. So they would all go to work, and they would try to get off of work before 3 o'clock. And then everyone would go and pick up their kids who were in high school, and we would all go picketing. So it was the parents and the kids doing an activity together, which was picketing in front of the stores. And because most of the farm workers there, in fact, probably all of them, did not speak English, there was this big concern about who's going to be the picket captain, because it had to be someone who spoke English. It had to be someone who wasn't afraid to speak up. So la abogada, myself, was selected to be the picket captain. So here I am, 14 years old, I'm the picket captain. And so the police would show up because people would complain and they'd claim that we were violating some kind of a restraining order and that we had to be separated by a certain amount of feet, and I can't remember now what it was. And so the police would come and they'd say, where's the picket captain? And everyone would point at me and they'd come and they'd say, you're in violation of whatever order. And I'd say, oh, sorry about that, officer. Okay. Okay, everybody, don't get too close. And we continued with that. And that was actually very exciting for me and for, I think, some of my friends and cousins, particularly the cousins. We were all picketing, not getting harassed by the police, but just being there and picketing and doing something that we felt would do some good. We felt that we were successful in convincing the stores to remove the scab grapes from the shelves. Later on, it was other products. But what was hard about it was that some people would go to the store just because we were there. And they would actually go in and they would scream at us and yell obscenities at us. And they'd say, go get a job, you lazy bums, things like that, which was really very, it was very funny for us because we knew that our parents were working and working very hard before getting to the picket line. And while they were on the picket line, they're doing this because they believe in Chavez, they believe in his dream, they believe in the union, and for no other reason. And they weren't getting paid. They were just doing it. They're bone tired from climbing trees and climbing ladders and working in the fields, and now in their free and their spare time, this is what they're doing. And they're bringing their kids, I think, because they have to keep an eye on their kids, and they have to make sure that the kids don't get in trouble, and because they're trying to teach their kids something that's very significant, which is giving to the community. And these people are coming in and yelling at us and saying, go get a job. And then they would go into the store and they would buy the grapes and they would walk out and throw them at us. They would laugh. They thought that was really funny. And of course, I'm the picket captain. And so I would go around telling everybody, this is going to happen. And do not yell obscenities back. Do not say anything mean to him, because that's what Cesar Chavez would tell us. He would say, you're going to lose your temper, you're going to get angry, you're going to want to hit someone with a picket sign, but you're not going to do any of those things. And, you know, that was, I think, a very important lesson for me as a 14, 15-year-old, because it taught me a lot of patience. It taught me to see how, I guess, how mean and ignorant some people are, but to feel sorry for them because they were ignorant and because they didn't know any better. And that's what my father would tell me. They don't know any better. Leave them alone. Don't even think negative thoughts. And that is something that Chavez taught people, the whole thing of to be nonviolent. Obviously, what I wanted to do was chase after them with my sign and beat them up or smash their car window. But I would just stand there and let them throw the grapes at me. And just, I'd say, muy buenas tardes, you know. And it taught me a lot to be on the picket line.
Let's stop for just a second. The idea that someone would go on a fast and risk their lives for some idea.
Chavez's fasting was a very strange idea for me. And I think for most people, not just for me. You know, one of the things about farm workers is that it is such a struggle to survive that if there's food around, you're going to eat it. The idea of not eating is just totally foreign idea. It's like someone right now going camping. I don't go camping because for me camping is living in a labor camp. That's camping. I did my camping as a kid. So fasting was just such a strange idea for us. Why would somebody fast? And it was difficult for us to see the connection of what he was doing and why he was doing it. Because, of course, many people did not agree with the nonviolence aspect. We would be on the picket line, and the Teamsters would come in and shoot over our heads. People would do things to us, scream at us, chase us. And Chavez would say, you can't yell at them. You can't cuss at them. You can't do anything. It's turn the other cheek. That was... that was an idea that was very foreign to us. We were in survival mode as farm workers, and survival mode means you defend yourself also. And he was trying to teach the strikers that you have to go with nonviolence. And so when he then shifted and went and started with a fast, I think it was because he wanted to ensure that the farm workers maintained their course of nonviolence. And it was something that certainly at first, the people that I knew, including myself, we just thought it was such a terrible idea to risk his health. For what? It was never clear to us, why is he doing this? And I think it wasn't until the fast was almost over that he got through to us as to why he was doing it. And the impact of what he was doing got through to us, because I would go to see him, and he looked so emaciated. And we started to see that this was not just a dream that he had. It was something that he wanted. He wanted to pass the dream on to us. He wanted to make sure that even if something happened to him, we would all be Cesar Chavez. We would be able to continue with his dream. And he wanted to make sure that with his fasting, that he was demonstrating his commitment. He was willing to risk his life. And I think on a religious basis, certainly there are parallels there that really hit home with all of the people. And it got to the point where we said, yes, Cesar, we understand now. We understand why you're doing this, and we understand why it's so important for us to stay the course and to go the nonviolence route and to continue with this struggle, even if it means to our death. I think my daughter's in the...
Okay,
yeah.
We'll stop for just a second. Were you still in Delano, or had you left to go to school when the contracts were finally signed in 1970? I mean, were you still in Porterville?
No, I had already gone to San Jose when the contracts were signed.
Yeah. But what did you think when you heard that?
Well, my father was involved in the first one. I think it was Christian Brothers. I could be wrong. And my father was involved in that one. And he went to the workers and with other people. He wasn't the only one. And they walked out. And so when the first contract was signed, it was almost like anticlimactic in many ways, I think, because we knew we were going to win. And we knew it was just a matter of time. So when the first contract was signed, it was a very joyous occasion. But like I said, I think almost anticlimactic, because it was, okay, this is just the first one, and let's keep going. And we knew this was going to happen. So it wasn't a big surprise to us, because by then we knew that we had gotten through to the farm workers. We knew that they understood why this was so significant, and that this was not a fly-by-night organization. And that was one of the things that I think was significant later on. By later on, I mean even 68, that people saw that Chavez was not going away. And Dolores Huerta was not going away. None of these people were going away. They were not going to disappear. They weren't going to rob them of their money and just take off. They showed by example that they were living like farm workers. They were not profiting in any way, and they were going to stay there until the job was done. And so the first contract, we were all ecstatic. We were celebrating. And then we were saying, okay, on to the next one. And the one after that, and the one after that, because we knew we were on a course of success.
And then in 1970, when all the Delano growers signed, that seemed like that was the payoff.
That was the payoff. And again...
Start the sentence so I know what I say. When the growers signed in 1970.
when the growers signed in 1970, that was the payoff for all of the hard work, for the sacrifice that all of the strikers, the farm workers, the members in the area, the leaders, Chavez and Huerta and all of the others. This is what they had been striving for many, many years, and it happened. And it validated all of the hard work and the suffering and the tears of everyone, of giving of their time for the union, because there was no doubt at that point. I mean, everyone was convinced that this was something that had been long in coming, and it was no longer a dream. It was a reality.
But there must have been some moment in the middle after people signed on to the dream where they said, sure, it's a dream, but I don't know if it'll actually happen. There must have been some point where people got convinced. They said, yeah, it's going to work. What was that point, do you think?
I don't think it was an event. I think people joined the union and became part of the union. They became heart and soul. They became a part of this, I don't want to say a group or even an organization. It was almost like this, they became a part of Chavez in many ways, like an extension of him. He changed everyone's life by just having contact with them. It's, in a sense, he brought out the best in everyone. And when times got tough, we would think of Chavez, and we would remember what he would tell us to do, and almost like the teachings. I mean, I don't want to get too religious here, because we didn't see him as a religious leader at all. We saw him as one of us, someone who was there to work with us, for us, and for our benefit. And I don't think that there was one event that we can say before 1970 that I can really point to and say, you know, when that happened, everyone was convinced that we were going to win. It was once we joined and started working with the union, we knew that it was going to be a long road to success, but we knew that we were going to be successful. And why we knew that, how we knew, that's difficult to answer. But I think it was just the faith, the confidence, knowing that we were right. I think knowing that you're right goes really far in a struggle, because people felt like, if I die today, I know that I did the right thing, and I know that I advanced the cause. I mean, look at what they would say in the meetings, you know, viva la huelga, viva la causa. You know, it's like, long live the union, long live our cause. I mean, what does that mean? It's like, it's fighting for the farm workers. Long live that idea. Let it live forever. And people believed that that's what they were doing. That's what I was doing. I certainly believed it. And the fact that contracts were signed, it was a foregone conclusion that it was going to happen.
Right in the middle of this period, after the fast, there was this episode where the farm workers got very involved in politics. Robert Kennedy had come to the fast, and then the farm workers went and worked for Kennedy. And that seemed like it was a moment where things could move to the next level, and then Kennedy was killed. Did that really affect the movement? Did people have a sense of loss from that?
The farm workers started to get involved in politics later on, and particularly in the campaign of Robert Kennedy. I'm not so sure that the mainstream farm worker understood that this was, in a sense, the next level for the union. I think that the organizers were aware of what they were doing. People like Gilbert Padilla, for example, other organizers like that. I believe that they had a plan, and the plan was, we need to, just like they started with the strike, then they went to the boycott, the next level was, let's get involved in politics. Let's try to effectuate change by getting involved in politics. But I think mainstream farm workers, like my father, myself, we did not understand that that's what was going on. We just believed in Robert Kennedy, and we believed in him as a person. We believed in what he said, and we embraced him. I was at one of the parks in Delano when he came to speak, and to hear him speak was just such a thrilling experience, because it wasn't just charisma that he had. It was his ability to reach out to everyone. And we believed in what he had to say, and we thought that he was the answer maybe to many prayers. And we thought that with him in the presidency, that this would escalate the change that we knew was inevitable, but this would make it happen faster. And so when he was killed, it was very devastating. It was a huge blow to the farm workers, to the movement, because they believed in him so much, and they believed that he would make changes. He was so smart. He was able to combine intelligence with humanity, which is difficult to do. And that's why he was such a great loss to the farm workers, and such a huge, huge blow. Everyone took it personally. All the farm workers felt like it was a member of their family who had died.
A moment. Tell me, sort of looking back on the whole experience, you know, at one point you told Ray that it was something that changed your life. What was it about being involved with the movement La Causa that changed you? How are you? You're a different person. How did you change? What do you know because of that?
Are you talking about how I went to college?
No, I'm not talking about the college stuff specifically. Oh, okay. Just about learning about what people could do and being empowered.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Being involved with the union was, I think, a tremendous experience for me. It shaped who I am today. And it shaped my father in many ways. And I think my father is the kind of person that has all these sayings, all these dichos. You know, most Mexicans have that. But he was shaped in large part by the union with respect to looking to the future. As a farm worker, like I said before, you look to today. You go to work, you make money to feed your family. And the future is not something that you are too concerned about, because you can't afford to look to the future. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. But the union forced farm workers to look to the future and to say, what are your kids going to do when they're grown up? Right now, you can only provide you work very hard, but you can only provide to pay the rent and the food. Don't you want your kids to go to college? Don't you want your kids to have a better future? And of course, farm workers say, of course, but we don't have any money. We can't do that. And the question is, well, why don't you have enough money? You're a very hardworking man. You work very hard in the fields. Why is it that you barely have enough, maybe barely have enough to eat? And I think everyone who was involved, the farm workers who were involved, started thinking of the future, and they started looking at their kids and trying to have their kids be better, have a better life than they had. And that certainly was something that happened with me. I think for the first time, I realized that I could go to college. That was not something that I had ever dreamt about. I didn't know anyone that had gone to college. Everyone I knew was a farm worker. The best job that anyone had of the individuals that I knew was working as a cashier at Penny's. We looked up to that person, and we thought, wow, they must be really smart. They're working as a cashier in a store. They're not farm workers. With the union, it gave us an opportunity to not just dream of having a better future for farm workers, But for the children who were involved, like myself, it gave us a glimpse of a different world that we didn't even know existed. The union attracted many college students, primarily from Berkeley, but also from other universities. And they were working selflessly. They were working in the union, no payment, no recognition. They went there to work because they believed in what Cesar Chavez was doing. And they really reached out to the teenagers who were around, and I was one of those. And they would speak to us about going to college. And, of course, my answer was always, I can't go to college. I don't have any money. My father is a farm worker. And they gave me a glimpse of a different life that they made me realize I didn't have to be a farm worker. I could choose to be a farm worker, but I didn't have to be a farm worker. And, you know, one thing my father always taught us is whatever work you decide to do, do it well. And if you're going to be a farm worker, be a good farm worker. Do the best job that you possibly can. But if you don't want to work hard like the way I work, you better go to school, you better go to college and get an education so you can get a better job. But that's as far as my father's advice went, because he didn't know how I could go to college. But being involved with the union, I was able to recognize that that was a possibility.
And it became a reality.
It sucks.
I think we're almost done.